Welcome back to the Mining Pod. On today's show, I'm joined by Greg Beard, CEO of Stronghold Digital Assets. Greg and I discuss Stronghold's use of waste coal to clean up Pennsylvania and mine Bitcoin, how Bitcoin mining incentivizes land reclamation, and the mining economics of vertical integration. Greg, welcome to the Mining Podcast. Thank you so much for your time today. How are you doing?
Excellent. Thank you for having me.
Excited for today's conversation. As I was saying before we started, I'm getting close to having every public company on the show at this point. You guys are definitely high on my list because you guys have an interesting energy strategy, which we will get into further down. And then second of all, I went to college actually in the area that you guys operate in Western Pennsylvania. So the things that you guys are operating on and working and fixing in the climate or the environment in that area, it's like near and dear to my heart. So just wanted to kick off right there. Let's get the quick pitch from you though, like 30 second elevator pitch if you can, on what Stronghold does, because a lot of our listeners probably are not familiar with you guys as of now. And then we'll dig into the nitty gritty stuff.
Sure. So, hey, we're a vertically integrated Bitcoin miner, which means we own our own power assets, and we'll get into where we get that power. We own our own Bitcoin mines and we manage them ourselves. So instead of buying power from the grid or buying power from a utility and pay all the associated fees and expenses from that are added on to that, we generate the power ourselves. And then instead of paying a party to manage our data centers, we have built and managed those ourselves. And in theory, that should give us a higher flow-through margin in what has turned out to be really a tough business from a margin perspective. So the lower your cost of power, the lower you can make those, the more money you'll make mining Bitcoin. That, we really view it as power arbitrage. So, you know, elevator pitches, we make our own power, manage our own assets, and we have greatly delevered the business in the past 6 months, and really for the purpose of, you know, trying to survive this crypto winter.
Gotcha. Well, we'll dig right into the energy topic as we begin. Waste coal is what you guys use for, I believe, most of your sites, maybe all of them. You can correct me in a second here. And basically, just I'm going to let you explain it. Waste coal is just like a bunch of excess coal that was not used during the 19th and 20th centuries for a lot of different production reasons. It's highly toxic. It's littered all across Western Pennsylvania where you guys usually operate. And you guys have figured out a way to reburn this, turn it into an environmentally beneficial power source, mine Bitcoin with it, and then there's excess ash that you guys can sell for fertilizer, if I understand it. So I'll hand it over to you. Really interesting structure that we have not seen from a lot of other miners.
Yeah. So, hey, waste coal, it has the word coal in it. So it's, you know, it's a four-letter word these days. But to be clear, we are remediating a waste coal problem that we didn't create ourselves. So we've been mining coal in Pennsylvania now for well in excess of 100 years. Until the mid-1970s, it was legal to mine coal and use the high BTU, use the good stuff, and leave the lower quality, lower BTU material that was mined, is leave it on the surface next to the mine. And that has created, like, as you would know, going to school in Western PA, a giant environmental crisis for Pennsylvanians, or really any coal mining area will have this waste product on the surface. So now there are literally more than 700 of these piles of waste on the surface, and they're not just sitting there, you know, quietly, harmlessly. When it rains, rain gets, you know, flows through them. That's what causes the rivers to run red in Pennsylvania. It's essentially creating, you know, kind of sulfuric acid or battery acid into the groundwater, into the rivers, streams, and lakes. The only way to fix the problem, I guess you could try to spend the money to put this material back underground, which is, you know, would be a multi-billion dollar futile exercise, or you can gather it up and burn it using, you know, technologies to eliminate most of the toxic emissions, like 99-point-something% of the toxic stuff that is in these piles that will end up in the atmosphere. If it's not cleaned up, we take out and remove with our emissions controls. So we really have we have two power plants, one in Western PA, one in Eastern PA, and we clean up millions of tons of this waste product a year. And so, like, as quote, an industry, we have the bipartisan support of Pennsylvania to clean up this mess. You know, that's the legacy from, you know, 100 plus years of coal mining. And the benefit is we get renewable energy credits for the power that we make. We get waste coal tax credits for every ton that we pick up and remediate. And that really helps us obtain a cheaper cost of power, which is really important for Bitcoin mining. It's that power arbitrage. So I think we really view ourselves as environmentalists, as remediating a crisis in the state. We've got, you know, unfortunately, about 15 years of this waste product still, you know, that still remains to be cleaned up. But when we do, if you go to our website, you'll see the before and after pictures. You go from like what looks like a moonscape to, you know, habitable, clean, you know, what looks like, you know, farmland or community centers. That's an important thing. Like, as you know, people may know, you have coal mining activity that is, you know, for 50, 100 years in an area, the mines are gone, then shut down. The mining communities have been sort of depleted of most of their residents. They tend to be sort of some of the poorer parts of rural America now. And, you know, tragically, what's left behind is, say, the jobs are gone, the industry's gone, but the waste is still there. And so there really isn't a powerful voice for these people and these communities that have these piles that remain. So hey, we're happy to be part of the solution, to be an advocate to clean up this mess.
I want to talk about the engineering side, because I think our audience really appreciate that as Bitcoin miners. My understanding is that the power plant type that came about that enabled you guys to reburn this coal or this waste coal came about in the 90s. And it's like a pretty powerful design that allows you to just like burn rock of some sort and return it into energy. So can you walk me through that a little bit?
Yeah. So to be clear, if the stuff that we are gathering up and burning, if it were coal, it wouldn't be there. It would be already burned in a regular furnace of a power plant, or it would have been used to make steel. So this stuff is not that. It has a lot lower energy content per ton than coal, but it does have, you know, coal attributes. So it has, you know, called between 6,000 and 10,000 BTU on average, or it might be more of a slurry. You know, sometimes they'll say it's sort of powdery, so it wouldn't belong in wouldn't burn properly in a thermal coal plant. So our technology is based on a circulating fluidized bed. So you could go to YouTube and see like a Mark Rober video on how do you fluidize like sand or a solid. And you're essentially pumping air into a solid and keeping it suspended. And so it's acting more like a liquid, which in this case, if you were to put this material like on the bottom of a regular thermal fired coal furnace or shovel it into like a locomotive engine, you know, of old, it would sort of burn, but smolder. It really wouldn't. It's not an effective way to convert it to ash. You know, it wouldn't do it. And if you could do it, this stuff wouldn't be here, right? So what our technology does is it suspends this material, and because it's getting exposure to a lot more air and oxygen that way, it's able to burn. And so if you were to study this, it looks like we've got sort of, seven-story, you know, vertical tornadoes where you have this material circulating, and we add limestone to it, which takes the sulfur out, which makes it much more friendly, you know, gets rid of the acid rain problem. And we end up with this beneficial use ash as a byproduct and power as a byproduct. So I think if you want to make cheap power, you know, build a natural gas plant, get hydro power. But if you want to remediate land, which is really what we were designed to do, power is a byproduct and this beneficial use ash is a byproduct. So that's a bit about our technology. So the plants are, you know, it would cost $500 million to build one of these things today. They are you know, Scrubgrass, which is their Western PA facilities, on about 650 acres. Panther Creek is our Eastern PA site. You know, our data centers are right there as well. To me, like, one of the most interesting things that we're doing today is benefiting from a really volatile power market. So, you know, people don't talk about it much. It's not, you know, in the news, but one of the effects of increasing the solar and wind to a grid is you make the grid less reliable. And if you went from, you know, coal-fired power plants and gas-fired power plants, and those run as, quote, baseload power all the time. And so that created a stable grid. The higher the percentage you add for solar and wind, the less stable you make the grid, because, say, sometimes the sun isn't shining, or a cloud might pass, or sometimes the wind isn't blowing where it's expected to. And so what do? Well, like, the solution today is the people have been adding industrial scale batteries to the grid to instantly supply power when it unexpectedly goes away. And that's a new need. So that those batteries can cost upwards of $1 million a megawatt. So we're not talking about it. Like, who doesn't want clean baseload renewable energy? Everybody wants it. Hey, but what if you heard that energy is going to cost you three times what your current energy bill is? So they'd be like, hey, you know what? Maybe, but a lot of people can't afford that. So, like, I'm really proud to say that we are part of the ecosystem that allows for solar and wind to be installed. And instead of adding that expensive battery, which is probably one of the biggest contributors to driving the cost of power up, and a big need to keep the grid stable, we can simply, when called upon, we can shut the data center off that's mining Bitcoin, and we can do that within seconds at, you know, the outside. And that really replaces the need for a battery, because it's essentially a giant load bank. And so I think that's going to have the effect of keeping a lid on energy prices while still allowing for the more renewable sources of energy to be installed.
Yeah, not to mention the environmental cost of building those batteries, right? The huge pit mines they have to make all over the world to extract the materials necessary for making these batteries. I want to talk one more thing about the power solution that you guys have before turning to mining economics in a little bit. Talk to me a little bit about the waste coal, and like where these things are in Western Pennsylvania or throughout the state of Pennsylvania. Like, just a meaningful sense of like how large these sites are that you guys are cleaning up, and how much on a daily basis you guys are able to like extract from the ground, or extract from, I guess it's sitting on top of the earth, and repurpose.
Well, think about it this way. I think probably the way to think about it, like in your mind's eye, we'll have, when we're running full steam, we will have 60 trucks running, doing three trips from five different waste coal sites in Western Pennsylvania. The biggest of which is called Russellton, which is maybe 35 miles from the plant. And, it's almost 200 truckloads of waste is delivered to the plant, you know, every day that we're running. And so that's, you know, Russellton is a 14 million ton site to clean up. Could have that wrong, but it's been photographed as, you know, and those photographs are visible online. Mm-hmm. It's just a, you know, it's sort of too big of a site to walk. You know, it's just constant excavators, bulldozers moving that material, loading it up and chipping it off to be cleaned. So the state of Pennsylvania says that there are more than 700 sites to be cleaned up. And, you know, my bet is that that's probably undercounting. And you've got literally thousands of miles of streams and rivers that are impacted. You know, it really is a, I think, hey, there are those that object so strongly to adding any carbon to the atmosphere that say, hey, you should stop remediating and just leave these piles in place. You've heard, hey, why don't you just put a foot of topsoil on top of these piles and then put some, seed on top and it'll look pretty and be, look grassy. The issue is it still rains. The water makes it right through that grass, right into the waste pile, and that water ends up in the same streams that they end up in today. So that's yes, you can have a beautification project, which is nice, I guess. But in many cases, we are cleaning up the sites that someone else spent money to put topsoil and seed on. And why is that? Because it doesn't fix the problem. So it's hundreds of piles. And by the way, I think of those piles, of the 700 piles, I think more than 80 of them are on fire right now and are smoldering. They get hit by lightning, they oxidize. So all the carbon that's contained in those piles is going to end up in the atmosphere. That's over the decades, that is what the future of those piles will be if they're left alone. When we remediate them, we also burn those piles and put carbon in the air. But when we do it, we have emissions controls that gets rid of the truly toxic materials in there that are the cancer causing ones. Which carbon. Hey, no one wants carbon in the air, but it's better than mercury. Or sulfur. And so we're really taking out the things you can't tolerate to have in the air that will be in the air and in the water if we don't clean them up.
Gotcha. And yeah, your co-founder Bill Spencer's vision for this is pretty interesting as well. From my understanding, he grew up in Western Pennsylvania. He was personally affected by this by himself and his family. And so you guys are on a mission to clean up that area. Tell me a little bit about how Bitcoin mining and your guys's energy formula came together. How did those two things work out where you guys created this firm, NASDAQ listed, the whole nine yards when so many other companies are still trying to figure out just the Bitcoin mining part?
Yeah. So, hey, my background is as an energy investor. So I spent more than 20 years as a private equity investor with a focus on energy. That's how I got to meet Bill in the first place. He was one of the CEOs that I partnered with and invested in it as a part of my past. And so through Bill, I became familiar with what his expertise is, which is cleaning up these piles. Bill ended up owning Scrubgrass as a part of his, sort of journeyman experience in this space. And he was beginning to mine Bitcoin sort of experimentally when Bitcoin was, a fraction of even today's price. And so I had left Apollo, where I had spent 10 years, and was mostly having, an undisturbed sort of good time with my kids. He sort of jokes that he was, he disturbed me from trying to figure out how to bake croissants in my kitchen, which is true, actually. And so I began to get involved with Bill, and it became apparent that the capital markets were open for mining Bitcoin. It became apparent that the economics worked well, and that the model of what being vertically integrated, in my view, as an energy investor and energy expert, is the best way to run this business. We told the market the story and raised private capital, a couple rounds of private capital, and then took the business public October 2021. So it's happened really quickly. We have capacity for 4 exahash now. So we've gone from, one pretty, worn down waste coal remediation facility that's now been sort of fully refurbished, bought another plant in Eastern PA called Panther Creek, built out two data centers, bought all these mines, miners, or machines, fully financed the business. And, now we're, struggling to get through crypto winter, which I think we're going to have an effective time doing. We've, recapitalized the balance sheet in a few smart ways. And now we're in a position, because we own our own plants, hey, we make enough cash to get through it. We believe. So we, you know, in months where the power curve gives us more money than mining Bitcoin, great, we'll sell power. Of course, we're rooting for Bitcoin and hash price, and we'll mine Bitcoin when it's economic to do so. So we have instead of having just a one-way option on hash price, we have an option on hash price and on power price, and both up and down. And that's really, we told the story to the market believing it, because it actually is true. You know, if you have the power curve collapses, fantastic. We'll shut the power plants down, pull power from the grid, and use that power to mine Bitcoin. If power prices go through the roof, fantastic. We'll shut the Bitcoin data center down and sell power to the grid, which we're able to do. And then in between, we arbitrage all the time, where we're cycling the data center on and off to take advantage of even intraday pricing. That's much more volatile than what we thought it would be, just given the strangeness in the power curve lately.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about mining economics now, and you've mentioned the vertical integration a few times. I think most people in the audience will know, but let's get a quick definition from you if you can. And then let's just talk about how you guys are able to mine through your stack. I'm personally curious about how you guys, having your own energy source, and especially such an interesting one as reclaimed waste coal, enables you guys to mine for maybe a lower cost or maybe a subsidized cost, things of that nature.
So, hey, our variable cost to mine is probably around $30 a megawatt. And available cost to make power is $30 a megawatt. So, that's probably in the lower, you know, toward the lower end of what people are able to acquire power for, you know, that are miners. I think if you were to enter into a PPA today, you're probably looking at, you know, 5 to 7 cents, you know, to buy power and then have hosting services. So our costs are probably half of what it would cost you to duplicate what we have today. We have fixed costs on top of that. So that's, you know, you would say, hey, maybe it's another $10 a megawatt or so if you were to bake every, you know, all of the other costs in. And that's that. If you look at the economics of mining Bitcoin, depending on which machine you have, you know, I'd say the latest and greatest machine, an X19J Pro, you know, you might earn around $90 to $100 a megawatt would be your revenue S19J Pro. So it's a wide margin today for that machine, which is why, hey, the mining business works and why we're able to make cash. I think if you looked at the fixed cost of being public, the cost of servicing debt, and you really need to have, you know, those low costs in order to make cash after you consider the whole picture, which I think we're working on for, you know, our final debt restructuring to make the whole ecosystem work for us, you know, which we've had success in restructuring, our NYDIG debt, where we actually gave the miners back to NYDIG in exchange for debt extinguishment. And that was we're now able to rebuy those same machines for a fraction of what we would have had to repay on that debt. We had a convertible preferred that we just announced that we're exchanging for equity in the business. So we really have come a long way in just making sure that we have the capital structure to survive. If we weren't able to make cash, then it would be okay. If you're just waiting for a higher hash price, I think we probably would have already, you know, given up. Thankfully the business with the current mining economics and the current power economics, you know, we make more cash than we consume, and things are pretty rough in terms of what the hash price is. You know, I think have seen, you know, record low hash prices. If you don't consider the more recent run from Bitcoin, you know, I would describe them as probably an unsustainably low hash price. So meaning either people would have to, we would expect machines to come offline or Bitcoin prices to go up, because I think most of the ecosystem really can't survive the hash price that we saw, you know, 10 days ago. I would say, you know, we have, you know, for Stronghold, we have a blend of machine efficiency that ranges from, call it $50 break even per megawatt, all the way through the, you know, S19j Pro, which we talked about, say, being around 90. And so you'll see our data centers, they're there many times during the day where power prices will be, say, $75 a megawatt, and we'll be shutting down the inefficient segment of our data center. And the good machines will keep running. So we are, you know, we're very sophisticated on that front to very, you know, to manage things in a, as efficiently as we can to capture as much economics as we can.
Gotcha. I want to go back to the $30 per megawatt hour cost that you mentioned earlier. Is that pre-subsidies or post-subsidies when you're kind of looking at your total model and no, tax credits and all those things?
Yeah, that's including the tax credits. You know, so we get a renewable energy credit, which is the same as hydro and wind. And those credits trade for around, you know, lately around $17 a megawatt, which is that's a huge advantage to get RECs in this space. And we also get what's called a waste coal tax credit for every ton that we clean up of this, of the waste. So that's inclusive of the government programs to clean up the mess.
Gotcha. And I guess I'm kind of curious about this. So I'll ask a follow-up. For the tax credit that you get for burning, do you guys often just keep burning your power plants as often as possible in order to get that tax credit, even if its hash price is low and there's not really an incentive to keep the miners online?
Yeah, you know what? No, we, if it depends on where power pricing is. So hey, if power pricing, if you get a quiet, you know, warm weather winter weekend, you know, you could see power prices in the mid-20s. And so then we'll have to do the math of, hey, does it make sense to shut the machine down for the weekend and then restart it again on Monday? And I would say, hey, if we expected like low power pricing to last for weeks, yeah, we probably would consider having a shutdown, or maybe we have a mechanical issue at a plant that we know that in the next month or so we need to take care of. So maybe we move that shutdown from, you know, a month from now to the low power pricing time. And so I think as you would expect, these are just math questions. You know, it costs about $50,000 to restart the plant if you shut it off. And then there is there is wear and tear. The things are not designed to be shut off and on like light switches. And so, you know, it's a lot of steel. The steel expands when it's hot and it contracts when it's cold. And, you know, there is a cost to a cycle. So, I think our preference would be to stay running, and our costs are almost always low enough to have it make sense to stay running. And so I think for us to want to shut it off, we would have to have probably an expected maintenance event, plus an expected low period of power pricing to be willing to shut it off, you know? And to keep in mind, able to shut the plant off, we can still mine Bitcoin. You know, we are then become power buyers instead of sellers.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for entertaining that question. I was just curious myself. Want to stay with finances for a second, since you brought up the subject, and then move over to talking about sort of like the implications and cultural impact that Stronghold is having in Pennsylvania and the Bitcoin space, which I think are two interesting things that you guys are sort of fitting into. On the topic of finances, it's obviously been a really tough few months for every miner. Like, go down the list of any NASDAQ PubCo from Bitcoin mining. They've all had restructuring, they've diluted, they've sold debt, or they've bought debt, they've sold miners, they've sold facilities. So everyone's sort of in the same position, and I've just kind of taken that as a fact at this point. Curious about your guys' plays. So you mentioned the three things you guys have done to date. We don't need to go through those again. but I'm curious more so about what has been your thoughts looking back on the last 2 years and then the moves you guys have made in terms of finances because of the decisions that were made 18 months ago, 2 years ago.
Yeah. So, hey, I think we absolutely took advantage of a hot market when we went public. So I'm proud as to how fast we moved to get public and to get access to, you know, the capital that we needed to set up these data centers, to refurbish these plants, to buy miners that we bought. I'm happy that we structured most of our debt, like our senior debt piece was with NYDIG, and that was designed as an equipment loan. So it wasn't senior debt. That was a, you know, hey, it was expensive debt, you know, but that debt gave us the option to either repay it or return those machines. And so, and that was a very, you know, that good decision was made, you know, 18 months ago to structure the debt in that way. And I think we owed, I think we talked about that past, we owed something like $27 per terahash on the machines. We can buy those same machines for probably $5 a terahash. So that was an extremely accretive decision that we made to return those machines and have that associated debt extinguished. And we, our existing senior lender has a corporate guarantee, which was required when we refinanced it. And that makes it much more difficult to navigate. And so I think we will, we've obviously done our best, and we have a business model that deserves to have, deserves to continue to be funded. And so I think that's fully expected. So I think of the decisions that we've made, hey, we've mostly been spot on, you know, in terms of what you would have done. I think you can't, I think obviously Bitcoin is a risk on security. And in other words, if I'm surprised at anything, it's that, you know, Bitcoin is really designed originally as a hedge for inflation and as a hedge against the government just printing of the trillions. And so I think it was unexpected, at least from my viewpoint, that inflation, while I would have expected inflation to result in higher interest rates, that's the, you know, common cure to inflation. I'm surprised, and I guess that's going to then have its impact on the equities markets. But I would have hoped that Bitcoin, you know, wouldn't expect it to be immune, but I would have hoped that Bitcoin would have traded up with the inflation threat rather than just down with tech equities, which is, you know, hey, I guess that was maybe unknowable, that maybe, you know, it clearly ran up with tech equities, and maybe it shouldn't have been as much of a surprise that it, you know, has gone down with those same equities. So, and that was probably the miss of the sector, including us. Do you always wish you could have done more to sort of hedge your existence? Yeah, of course, but I'm not sure what we could have done. You know, if you want to be in this business, it required debt and equity financing to get done. And into the scale that we are, I think, hey, we can't really underwrite, you know, Bitcoin pricing to return to 50,000 plus in the short run. But hey, I'm still hopeful. It's hanging in there really well given the route in the crypto space. And yeah, Bitcoin is different than other, you know, crypto securities. And so I think, hey, we'll see what happens. But I think we're still fundamentally believers in blockchain and Bitcoin as being the sort of the right crypto to be mining. But sort of as far as like reliving our financial history, I think we mostly got it right. But hey, if you could relive, you know, some aspects of some agreements, of course you would if you could. But I promise you, we got the best deals that were available at the time that we underwrote them. we stress tested, and I think we have lived through an environment that was probably much more difficult than we anticipated having to live through, for sure. Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Appreciate the frankness there. Yeah, it's definitely interesting to see just looking back on the deals that have been made and how those have come to light and see who's still running. And I'm thankful that we've had some Chapter 11 filings, but it doesn't seem like anyone's necessarily going under. They're just actually taking that restructuring and that pause to rebuild things. And there's some, and then there's others who are still, you know, in the thick of it, still mining Bitcoin. Love that too. Let's talk about the cultural implications. So first starting with Pennsylvania, and then talk about the Bitcoin community for Stronghold, and we'll end up in the conversation around there. First with the community in Pennsylvania, I'm curious, has there been like a noticeable change in the communities you work with? Do you guys employ a lot of people in certain communities? Are people taking notice of things you guys are working on?
Yeah, so, hey, we had, you know, if you were to come visit us during the build out of our data centers, you would have seen, you know, probably 100 pickup trucks. And hey, we're probably the highest paying employer in Venango County, which is a tougher rural county in Western PA, you know, and our jobs are great jobs. So it's, you know, if you're a specialist running a power plant or a specialist managing a data center, and you live around the plant, it's one of the better jobs you can get in the county. And so absolutely people took notice. And you know, I think our supporters of what we're doing, like in a way, I think these plants, have been at risk, you know, of just being shut down and torn down permanently, which would be a tragedy for those communities. Cause then they're going to be stuck with this waste pile for another 500 years. You know, there isn't a solution to cleaning up this mess without these plants. I'm very happy that we have the community support, that have the state support to do the remediation that we do. And hey, Bitcoin has helped make it possible to stick these to, you know, to keep the plants running and keep people employed.
Have you noticed any pushback from environmentalists of any sort, or are they getting on the bandwagon and joining?
You know what? Those that were against remediation in the first place, they were against it before, and they're against it today. And I would say, hey, to the extent that someone can show us a definitive way to clean up these piles in a permanent way, if that technology existed, where is it? Because people have been complaining about it, you know, since the piles have been around. And like I said earlier, it's like, if you want to fantasize that tossing some grass seed on top of a waste coal pile is going to remediate it, okay, it'll make it look better. But, you know, you won't be drinking that water.
Yeah,
it's still going to wreck all the aquatic life and the groundwater. So it doesn't really do anything. So I think it's those that actually are impacted by having a waste coal pile near them or in their community, they want these things cleaned up like the proper way, you know, not the fantasy way. But hey, if I would say, hey, thankfully, I don't think like lobbying against the cleanup of these piles, that hasn't really been an effective fundraising tactic for any of the environmental groups that might say they're against it. And so, and plus, hey, we've had a few of those guys even on site go, hey, what would you do? How can you clean this other than to just pick it up and do your best with getting the emissions controls out of it? And they'll say privately, that's the best thing you can do. It's the only thing you can do. Mm-hmm. And maybe someday there'll be a way to sequester the carbon that we emit in the atmosphere. I'll tell you, we are working on that, you know, on solutions around that today. Like, I'm not sure that we'll see it, you know, economically, but hey, we're working on it. The beneficial use ash that we create, that could be a great product for like a carbon related concrete. So we're working on that. So it's we're not sitting still. It's a dynamic industry, both on the, you know, Bitcoin side as well as the environmental side. And, you know, we have, I think just what makes us interesting versus others, it's just the option. So, hey, we're cleaning up the environment. Maybe we could end up selling this ash for, you know, if it goes into a green concrete, that could end up being a whole other revenue line, you know, that, if Bitcoin doesn't go well, we might end up making more money as a carbon offset business. So it's a, just the optionality around our story is exponentially greater than most of our peers. And I respect, you know, what other people have built as well. But I, if I had one complaint, it's, I don't think it's recognized by the equity markets.
Well, let's talk about the Bitcoin culture really quickly here. So on the environmental side, you guys might not get all the love that you deserve. And I feel like on the Bitcoin side of things, there's a lot of Bitcoiners, especially in the mining sector, who are very pro-fossil fuels. They're not super worried about climate change. And so I do think, from my limited purview, that there hasn't been recognition of some of the green tech that's being produced and monetized by Bitcoin mining. And I would even put Stronghold into that category, since you guys do have a very strong story to tell. What's your personal take on the Bitcoin community and how you guys fit into it? Any critiques or thoughts or even praise for how Stronghold fits into the category for miners or the Bitcoin community writ large?
Yeah, you know what I would say? I think the Bitcoin community has done a really good job in the past, I would say, year at making a big effort to decarbonize. So you could say, hey, you know, Marathon abandoning the Hardin facility. You know, that's and they did it at a hard time for them. Like, you know, and I think that says a lot. And obviously, you know, one of the bellwethers in the space. And so I think what they do speaks in a large part for the industry. You know, there are industry groups that have been formed that communicate with politicians. That's a, you know, so it's an organized bunch. I guess if I had, you know, aspirations, it would be for the power regulators to recognize that the ability to toggle a data center on and off makes the grid stable. So it was like, it's government policy and installing solar and wind that is a big contributor to making the grid unstable. And hey, that's not really, we really shouldn't, you know, tripling the cost of electricity shouldn't be the cost of renewable energy, but today it is. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, while some want to be critical about the you know, related and carbon emissions that Bitcoin has attributed, the industry would do well and regulators would do well to recognize that, hey, stabilizing the grid and not spending all this money on batteries, it's going to increase people's cost of power and do a lot of environmental damage. You know, that should recognize as well. So that maybe, you know, and I think we're, Stronghold is a part of that, given that we do cycle our data centers on and off as the grid needs our power. And I know others do it as well, you know, particularly a lot of Texan guys do it. And that's making a grid that would be a bigger disaster than what it is, like just an unmitigated disaster. So hopefully we can start to sell ourselves as a solution to the green energy goal that we have as a country, instead of a problem that as we've been cast in the past.
Love it. Okay, last thing we got to get from you before we leave. It's January, start of a new year. What is your projection for the total online exahash of Bitcoin by the end of this year? So December 31st of 2023, where do you think we're at as a network for hash rate?
You know, I hope I'm wrong. I hope we can keep obviously it's going to depend a lot on Bitcoin pricing, right? So I guess, you know, if we could see under 300 exahash, that would be a nice thing to see if people don't go buy with this, you know, installing, you know, say more and more machines. But I guess that would be a guess. If there were 260 now, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. it would be, hopefully we'd see a top off around 300.
Okay.
Or less.
300 or less. Yeah. You and me both are hoping that. Greg, thank you so much for joining the Mining Pod. Appreciate your time greatly.
My pleasure. Good to talk to you. Thank you.